Hey, this is Kent here at MindChange, and we will be having a Q&R episode coming up soon. We'd love to respond to your questions in this audience-driven episode, so please send them to podcast@mindchange.com. When you send in your questions, please attach an audio recording of it, stating your name, where you are from, and then clearly asking your question for us. Please also transcribe your question in written form on the email when you send it in. We look forward to hearing from you.
Today, we are doing another one of our Q&R question and response videos. So we've asked you to send in questions, and Kent is here to help me answer them. Welcome to the Mind Change Podcast. I'm your host, Heather McKean, speaker and author of the bestseller, Mind Change, and creator of the Mind Change Method. Out of the ashes of my own healing journey, I became an armchair expert in the mind-body connection and the neurobiology of trauma. Using the methods we will discuss on this podcast, we have helped countless people transform issues that previously seemed impossible to overcome. Each week, we'll dive deep into the strategies, insights, and success stories that will inspire and equip you to harness the power of your mind, body, and spirit in order to create the life of your dreams. Together, we are changing the world, one mind at a time. Welcome back to the Mind Change Podcast. Please take a moment to like, share, subscribe, download, and all of those things. It really helps us to continue to create content that you are interested in and want to hear, and makes the show even better.
Thank you guys for sending in your questions. Some of you send them in through YouTube comments. Some of you send them in through Instagram, other things. And then there are those who send it in the way that we actually love for it to be sent in, which is podcast@mindchange.com. And it's a audio recording of it. So it's really wonderful when we get to hear the voice of the person who's asking. So that being said, let's dig into some of these responses that we have from these questions.
I think one of the first ones we have is an audio recording, correct?
It is.
All right. So let's take a moment to hear from the question asker herself.
Okay.
Hello, Heather and Kent. My name is Lou. I'm a German living in Italy. So hello from Europe. I'm at the beginning of my mind change journey, but I've already had significant success dealing with some problems just by incorporating the practices you talk about in your book. So thank you for that. My question is, how does the mind change approach influence parenting? Or more specifically, managing one's own emotions as well as children's emotions. I'm a mother of a toddler and an almost preschooler. We try to raise our kids with respect, trying to offer them support as much as we can. However, with certain behaviors, I get really triggered and lose my cool. It's obviously not helped by the chronic lack of sleep in the past years, but still. On the other hand, I feel like with the fashionable approach of always validating child's emotions when they're having a tantrum, they sometimes sink even deeper into despair instead of coming through. If that makes sense. I would really appreciate your insights in regards to this. By the way, do you believe if someone's brain has had more practice with change, it's easier to do mind change? I have moved countries, started new jobs a few times, and speak multiple languages, and was wondering if that might influence the fact that I've had success with mind change. Thank you very much for all that you do, and sending my best.
Ooh, great question. Thanks, Lou. Okay. So many good things in here. First, parenting. And bless your heart with your lack of sleep. Been there, done that. So anything we deal with parenting, we go back to kind of a core concept, which is we can only congruently give what we authentically have. Meaning, if you're being triggered, that's yours. A trigger means that there is something inside of you being pulled on, right? That generally comes from our own experiences and the way that we were parented or the way that we were dealt with as a child. And so fantastic that you've had, you know, your victories and everything. I would say our ability to handle what children do reflects a lot from our ability
to, or our relationship we have with our own body and with our own subconscious mind. If we are curious, exploratory, calm, allowing feelings with ourself, we will very frequently be able to do that better with our children.
Right. And like Heather was saying at the beginning, with this whole authentically feeling what we're holding or holding whatever that is, if our intention, and there's been really great things over the last number of years regarding parenting, like really, there's a lot of different terms out there, but we'll just call it conscious parenting. So there's been a lot of amazing new tools and ways of handling children and ways of dealing with children that I think is really going to help the world in general and the next number of generations, because you're giving them something different. But with that being said, if someone had a childhood that was not the things that they want to give their children, then yes, you can absolutely put these practical things into place. But remember that children feel what we hold more than feel what we say.
Correct.
And so whatever, if like Heather said, like we're not necessarily holding ourselves with that creativity and space and gentleness and all those other things, but we're trying to give it, we can give it to a point. But at some point, Lou, like you said, those triggers are going to come up. So that's a place to explore.
It's behavior modification versus our mode of operation.
And I will tell you, Lou, I am so good at behavior modification. Heather will tell you this for years and years. And there's still things that I'm working through that I'm like, ooh, was I just changing that behavior? Or is there another response inside of me by default? Mm. And that's what I have to always go after. That's what we have to go after as humans, of if the default isn't changed, if I have to, you know, every day take an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours to like get myself into a certain state to be for the day, then it's probably not my default. It's still better to do that than not do anything at all. But it does come down to what is going to be your default. And then you're going to be able to give that to your children.
And just to be a little bit soft with ourselves, many of us come from situations where we're like, you know what? I'm going to parent really different than I was parented.
Good job.
How are you going to do that?
And often it's because I'm reading a book or I'm getting information or things like that, which is great.
But that is not your lived experience.
Right.
You've never done that before. You've never lived that. And oftentimes we're doing it in opposition to. For instance, I will just speak very personally. I had issues with anger. I would get really angry. It was the only emotion I allowed myself to go fully into. I was not a big feeler, or I was. I just wasn't doing them, allowing them. And so I was very angry. And of course, as I finally was able to have children, I didn't want to be an angry mommy. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be an angry person. And I was living in like a religious environment and cultural environments, and with a lot of surrounded myself with a lot of other people where anger would not have been acceptable. I knew better. Mm. And yet I would get into situations, tantrums, you know, where like just complete defiance and everything. And in me, as much as I tried to do it differently, I would just like volcano with anger. And it wasn't until I went back and addressed my own childhood, my upbringing, the things I was angry about from my childhood, then that I had every right to be angry about, but really engage with that and deal with that and release that, that frankly, I really didn't feel angry anymore. So this is the difference between when you white knuckle it and you behavior modify versus you resolve the things that are bringing up the unwanted, undesirable behavior in you as an adult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's that congruent thing. When we're white knuckling it, our children feel it. And then we get even more frustrated because you're like, I'm saying the right thing. I'm doing the thing the book told me to do. I'm doing the thing I wish my parents would have always done. And the child is still responding in the same way.
Or as she said, like maybe sinking deeper in. Or like, I'm going to let them do this. But like, it does the deepest part of us really want and feel safe letting them do that? Like, does that feel for us as a child, was it safe to go deeper into that? If not, it's not necessarily going to be safe to allow our children to go into that. Again, correct. This is all subconscious stuff. So,
and remember, children co-regulate not to our words. Mm-hmm. They co-regulate to our energy, to our feelings, to our heart rate. Mm-hmm. And if it on the outside, I'm speaking calm and I'm patient and I'm loving and I'm reassuring and affirming, but inside I am still volcanoing, they still feel the volcano, but we're making it worse because now we're incongruent and we're harder to read because our voice and our face and is saying one thing, but our energy is saying another. And that's actually more dysregulating for a child.
So I want to say such an incredible, great job that you are putting these things into practice, that you're already seeing shifts, that you're already incorporating these things from the book. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah. Good job, Lou.
And with that also, what I might tell you, since you're incorporating some of the practices and some of the, like the self-work things, is find the behaviors that bother you with them. And you can definitely work through those, but I would also like go back and find what behaviors that I do that bothered someone else when I was a kid and work through that. Like, once you get through, this is how my dad responded when I did this, or this is how my mom responded when this happened, or you work through all that stuff so that those, again, we're just doing a quick Q&R, but like, so that those old neural pathways, like you cannot find them anymore. Like, they don't respond the same way. You're allowed to express, you're allowed to feel, and whatever's there. When those are shifted in you as a child feeling safe, then all of a sudden it will translate to your current self and the way that you are, in one sense, genuinely allowing your kids to feel what they need to feel.
We did an entire mentoring call for our course students. So we do live mentoring calls every month with them about reparenting. Mm-hmm. And there's a certain level of understanding and work that you've done in mind change to that, to the point where now we realize there needs to be some reparenting. And we've got tips and tools and stuff on how to do that. That really helps. When we are doing that with ourselves, it really translates with our kids. We've seen that in our own children. And I think every single mentoring call, we hear victories in people's children. Mm, right. Yeah. Our last one was like child victory, child victory. We're not working on kids. We didn't come in working on that. But when people are changing themselves, they're getting all of these victories with their kids. Yeah. And I mean, that's one of those wonderful mind change side effects.
So yes, to answer your question, you know, about kids and working for yourself. Yeah. Like, the more that you do with yourself, the more that your kids also will respond to that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the next part of the question is like, if you're used to changing a lot of things in your life, does that make mind change easier?
I love that question.
It's a great question.
I mean, okay. From a neurobiological standpoint, the more ways that you've learned to adapt, so multiple languages, multiple cultures, I mean, that creates different neural net highways in your mind. So that's a really great question.
If I was going to answer it, it may be, and again, it's a really good question, but like, it has to do with like, it's not like, oh, I've moved a lot, so therefore I can change my past and all of that, but maybe more of like a capacity level, like your capacity to expand. It's almost like your brain is used to neuroplasticity on a different level.
I would think maybe even more so, it's your relationship with change.
That it's safe.
You perceive these things to be good, that you're able to do all these things. And therefore, that is, you have a positive relationship with change. Mm. We could have someone else saying this exact same thing, being like, is this making it harder for me?
Because
I've had to move all these times. I had to learn all these languages. I had to, you know, be involved in all these other cultures.
Such a good point.
I think it's the mindset.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you probably are set up for better change.
Change is good. Change is safe. Change is amazing.
It grows
right?
you.
Yeah,
it expands you.
And so then
because
doing
that's
this
your reality.
Work is, there's your byproduct of like, well, when I do this mind change work, it's also going to be good, expansive, transformational, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. Great question, Lou. Thank you for those. Okay. Our next question is Rob from Ohio. It says, the world seems to be saturated by healing modalities, life coaching, different programs, communities, and courses. There are many options to choose from today, whereas a number of years ago, there were way fewer choices. How will I know what is right for me, and how does mind change differ in its approach from the many coaching options available?
Ew. Good question, Rob from Ohio. This has actually come up a little bit lately, so I love this question. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there, so much stuff. And a lot of people are making the same promises and calling themselves things. For instance, in the somatic world, a lot of people are saying they're doing somatic experiencing, but didn't actually train with Peter Levine, who that's like a 3-year program or something like that. So this is where it gets, I think, unfortunately, we have to just do a little bit more due diligence. Listen, it's happened with us. We've had numerous clients who come in and maybe they were coaches before of some sort, but they were feeling personally very limited or limited with their ability to do whatever it was they were doing, reach clients or get lasting change. So they would come and do mind change sessions. And because they did a number of mind change sessions, they felt like, oh, I feel like I know what it is that you guys are doing and it really, really works. So I'm going to go do this. I'm going to do this with my clients or with my people that I coach.
I'm going to incorporate like things that I perceive were happening in the session for me and help other people or something like that. Or maybe like tools from the book or different things.
Right. So for one, the only approved mind change practitioners that we have that have trained with us, that have tested with us, it is a long involved process are on our website, mindchange.com. Anyone out there saying that they're using mind change or mind change tools likely came in, had sessions, and they think they're doing mind change. Here's the problem with that though. If you've come in and you've been a great client and you've got a lot of good changes, you are more than likely subconscious through a lot of it that you didn't really realize. So you think that you're doing what we're doing or that you know why we do what we do, and they don't. And
it's like, it takes about, if someone's going to become a practitioner, like a full-blown practitioner, it takes about 4 years from the time they start. Like, I'm going to have a session and then I'm going to go through these courses and then I'm going to, you know, I mean, it takes quite a while. We have our internships 2 years and, you know, and that doesn't necessarily guarantee anything, but yeah.
And all of our practitioners came in as clients.
To begin with.
To begin with. Yeah. And with that intention. So another thing that I'm seeing is a lot of people certifying through weekend workshops or just saw this last week where you pay for an accreditation. So I looked into it and it's like, oh, I'm a part of this coaching business and this coaching collective I've gotten certified, and literally all that you have to do is pay them and they say that you are certified to be doing all of this stuff. They don't know your credentials. They don't know what you really know. They don't know if you're actually helping people. There's no accountability. So I do, Rob, out there, it's scary out there. There are a lot of people who are really good marketers. They're fantastic marketers, but maybe not. And they will have you believing that they've get all the success and all of these things, but they're just really fantastic marketers. So your question is, how do you choose what's right for you? I think for one, vet your people a little bit. I think that that's really wise to do. Vet your people a little bit. How did they get into it? How long have they been doing it? Where did they study? Do they, you know, how did they come up with what they're doing? Look at their accreditations. Anyway, I think that that's one angle. It's unfortunate that we have to do that, but there you go. And I think, listen, then not every approach is for everybody. We like to say we take a very balanced, wide approach because we understand enough and have trained enough in more what we call bottom-up approaches, which might be your more somatic EMDR, EFT types of approaches, and then a nervous system rewiring. And then on the other side of it, we've got the neuroscience-based approach. So more of your NLP, hypnosis, hypnotherapy, and then of course, mind change, which is a conglomeration of all of those things and the latest neuroscience. But that being said, mind change is not for everybody because it takes a lot of personal responsibility, accountability, and, you know, commitment to like, I actually really want to change.
Like there are some people that are like, I just kind of want to take a baby step every month, you know, and that's kind of their comfort zone right now. And that's okay. Whereas like we go really deep, really fast in mind change. But if people stick with it, even for like a few sessions, four sessions, five, like we get there really quickly. And so, yeah, I mean, it's some people don't want to go that deep that fast, and that's okay.
And some people are looking, and this is not a judgment. This is real.
Yeah.
Some people want their story validated. They want to be validated. They want to be understood. They want to be heard. They want to be seen. And that's primarily what they're looking for. They're not yet looking for change.
There's also people that are looking to be walked with as like a mentor. They want a mentor. They want like a friend type thing, but it's...
They want a coach. They want a cheerleader.
Like they want someone like there for them walking with. And that's great too. Like those wonderful, awesome that that's what you want. Mind change is about digging in and getting the results through deep subconscious rewiring and changing the whole program of your possible negative identities and all of these other things. So
we do have support systems in place that do walk with people a little
sure.
bit.
Sure. I mean, it's the student community. That's mm-hmm. the different things, but yeah.
And listen, that's purposeful because we don't want anybody giving us the power. My coach, my mentor, you know, I have to call them and, you know, we want to make sure that we remain facilitators, but not gurus. So there's some purpose behind that.
Yeah.
But I think, listen, Rob, you're looking for help. Awesome. That's so great. I think it's a great first step. I know it can feel overwhelming. I think also do consultations with people. We offer consultations. Do a consultation. Like, is it salesy? Is it like pitchy? Is it whatever? Are you trying to get wrapped up into some like 6 month to 1 year container? I mean, I'm not saying those things are negative. If that's what you're looking for, great. But no, be able to ask and you know, find that stuff out.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
I mean, I did a 9 month container with a number of these different things for a different purpose.
Yeah.
But like those kind of things can be really wonderful. It depends what you're looking for. Like what's the purpose of it for you? Like, what are you trying to get out of this? So anyways.
In fact, a lot of people come to us, they are involved in these long-term containers, somatic containers, embodiment containers, various things, but they're like stuck with some things. They come, we dig out some really deep stuff and then they go back into their container.
But they're able to actually get traction.
You just worked with a client that has been in somatic work with a particular coach for years, right?
Yeah, 3 years, four years.
And came and did a session and was like, oh my gosh, we got to more in one session than I've been able to get, you know, to in years with this. And not saying anything negative about, I think there was a lot of benefit in the work that she was probably doing, but we go deep, we go relatively fast,
yeah.
Faster than anything else I know, but that isn't for everybody. So I think there's things to consider. I hope that that helps give Rob a little bit of direction.
Good question. Okay. This one is from Becky Lee on YouTube. It says, can you share some insights on how your family has boundaries with food, like gluten-free and plant-based? I think you guys are. And how you still engage with the community and society with your kids. How do you keep those boundaries and not live in fear of those foods and not have fear for your kids? And are you bringing your food or bringing food to every social event or a social function? I've done that for years and it feels restrictive. But how do I give my body loving, nourishing foods and still socialize when so many foods are in social settings have non-food ingredients? I don't want my kids growing up in fear around food, but I also want them eating healthy. Not sure if this question makes sense, but I would love some practical examples of how you navigate food in everyday settings, church events, playdates, potlucks, parties, having family over for dinner, or going to someone else's house for dinner, etc. Thanks. And just so you guys are aware, this was a comment from our recent episode around food and how people have food allergies and how those are developed and how you can eradicate those and like all of this. So this was based on that and hearing a little bit of our story and like what we choose to do versus don't do, why all of that, but then how can she do this in society? So
I'm glad you told me that because that was going to be my recommendation.
Yeah.
Listen to that episode. I think, so Becky Lee, we danced this dance for years. And it was not a fun one by any means. I don't know that I can speak to you in particular if this was your case, it is your case. But there's a lot I recognized in myself. I'll let you speak for if you recognized in this in yourself, Kent, but around control, lack, judgment. And a lot of that was playing out in food, as it does. And so we definitely eat a specific way, but it is, I think, really now it's out of abundance and it's out of freedom rather than fear and restriction.
Instead of like, it's, oh, what I can't give my body and what's not good for me and all of these, it's from like, man, like I want to fuel my body with such abundant love that I'm going to feed it this way and this way and this way how I choose.
Mm-hmm. So I think that there's some work that needs to be done that would be helpful around safety and control and lack versus abundance that will set the stage for there to be different decisions made that align with this. Because when that's the case, so what we do, we socialize a lot and we go and do a lot of things. And yes, food is super integrated into a lot of societal, cultural things.
Yeah.
And it bothers some people, I will say. I know it bothered my family, and it might still, because I still get comments about the way that I eat, because they feel restricted by it. And I'm not, I don't go hungry. I eat plenty of food. I like what I eat. I enjoy it. But that had to be real in me first. I don't think it used to be. I think I was avoiding things like gluten and dairy and various other things that I would avoid because I felt in fear. I felt like these things were bad and doing bad things to my body. Or I was giving those things, the avoidance of those things, power over me feeling good. Mm. And I needed to shift all of that. And then it's this thing of like, if it bothers other people, that's their, like, it's, I'm like, it doesn't bother me. I'm really happy. I'm very filled up. And, you know, some people feed you out of love and it stresses them out. And so it's just, I have to realize like, that's their thing. It's not my thing. So I try to make it like It's not an issue, really. I feel like it's an issue for us very much, is it?
It's something that I don't really think about much. In fact, I will tell you, I was helping out and assisting at this retreat recently with some different people, and a number of us had gone out to food, and I let them choose, like, yeah, wherever you want to go, it's great, you know, whatever. Ended up being there, and it was a place that, like, didn't really have anything that I would personally choose to eat. So I got something, and, you know, they were like, oh, sorry, we didn't. I was like, I don't care, like, that's fine, like, I'll take care of myself, like, it's not a big deal. And we had a great time together, right? So it's, again, one of the things that I find interesting that you wrote is, how do we keep those boundaries and not live in fear of those foods? What I would say, if you've been following us for a while and you're like, okay, how do I work on this? Get into the self-work or work with a practitioner on fear of foods. Like, if you have fear of food, like, you have to eradicate those fears first so that, like, there's no fear. And my guess is maybe there's some early childhood or teenage or maybe a young adult, I don't know, boundary things that have nothing to do with food. But if you felt like your boundaries weren't respected as a child or at some point, it's going to come out in some other way. And so perhaps, again, we don't know you, I don't know your history and all of these, but these are just different things you could possibly work on using mind change. So,
and I think there's, at least this was present for us, there was judgment oftentimes about what other people were eating, and
yeah,
you know, and that came from internal judgment.
Yes. Judgment was definitely what I recognized is, oh, it's not actually just food judgment. It's this judgment. It's that judgment. It's that. And oh, it's just, okay, how am I judging myself? And realized there was a lot of judgment within myself. And once I dealt with those things, it became looser and looser and looser of, like, wait, people can do whatever they want, and that's great. And I can do whatever I want, and that's great. And there's freedom in letting go of the judgment and the fear and all of these other things.
And what's interesting is, it used to be that kind of thing where we would go places and it'd be like, oh my gosh, there's nothing we can eat here. And it felt, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's funny, when a lot of that stuff changed to where we were just like abundance. It really was, I think, about abundance. Then we became less restrictive and controlling, and we were like, whatever, we'll go. Sometimes we eat beforehand, sometimes we eat after, if there's things there that we would choose not to partake in. But it's not out of fear or restriction. But I feel like since we shifted all of that and started doing it that way, there are more options everywhere we go. See, that's our filters too, because we can go to particular places that may not cater to, like, Whole Foods type of feeding, and there's something there. Like, I'll go and there's a complete beautiful fruit tray or carrot tray or whatever, and that to me or like veggie tray, carrot tray.
Hey, there's different kinds of carrots you could possibly,
right? And then when I see those things, I'm like, oh, it feels abundant. It feels like I feel given to, and not like it's restrictive. And if there's nothing there that I can eat, that's okay, because I can eat either before or after, and it's fine. We don't really bring food that much anymore.
No, we used to do that all the time.
We used to do it all the time.
For, like, social events and things, but no, not anymore.
No, we don't really do that anymore. But I think that comes from, it's not like something we necessarily chose. Mm-hmm. I think it was just a natural byproduct of us feeling less judgmental, less restrictive, and more abundant. Mm. Yeah, hope that helps.
Great. Okay. I love this handle, this YouTube handle, Kimba the Lion 4. Kimba the Lion.
Oh, cool.
Speaking to your episode on addiction, so this is from the addiction episode that we talked about a long time ago. What about withdrawals? Are people going to have withdrawals if they quit while utilizing mind change? Are withdrawals one of the primary reasons people are afraid to quit?
Mm. Okay. Such great questions. This is interesting, because I have met numerous people over the years in the addiction world that quit and did not have withdrawal. Didn't do it. So I think withdrawals are something more that we do rather than have, kind of like illness, disease. They are there for a reason. Mm. I think that it can happen. It's kind of like childbirth, which we all know well now. If at least if you follow us, you will know this. Pain in childbirth is not a given, it's an option. I think withdrawal and addiction is an option. It is not necessarily an absolute given. That being said, many people struggle with withdrawal, stopping an addiction. And I think there is a reason. The body is freaking out. How are you going to get the thing that the addiction gives you? It's freaking out. So I do think with mind change, you're going to see less, would see less of this, because we answer that question for the mind and body. We tell it, we say, this is what the addiction was in the first place. It is not about the drug, the porn,
the cigarettes.
It's not about that. That served a purpose. It was a tool to get the thing that you really wanted. So we track back to the past, and then we give you your future and what it's going to look like and how you're going to get those needs met. So the way we deal with the present is to deal with okay, let's walk through what it's going to look like to come off of this. And we teach the body and we give it that in the now. And that really helps. I'm thinking about all of the addiction protocols that I've done, and I cannot remember any of you out there who have been my clients for this and want to be like, oh no, hey, I did. Please let me know. But in the thinking back, I do not remember withdrawal being an issue.
Well, part of it too is because, again, your body, yes, there's chemical reactions in your body and all of these different things from drugs and from whatever. But there's also like your body saying, hey, what are you doing? We need this, or this is normal, or this is how we've learned to normalize whatever we're doing, right? And so when you are telling your brain something different, when your brain is defaulting to, oh, I'm safe to do something different, then when you stop doing that thing, your brain isn't like, right? It's just, oh, well, I already know something else to do instead. I already know something better.
Remember, coping, addiction is a coping strategy.
Yeah.
When the need is met, the need to cope is usually gone.
Right.
Now, I will say there's some complication, not complication, but there's some nuance to doing addiction work, because we link a lot of things. And sometimes it's even the association to bodily movements, sounds of things. There's a lot to cover to really clear an addiction, but it can be fully cleared to where there is no desire for the thing anymore. There's an aversion to it. So that really helps with the withdrawal processes. The body's like, why would we want to create a negative reaction to stopping this thing that has hurt me so much? Mm-hmm. But it's mind, body, nervous system, all that's answered prior to the stopping of the particular addiction.
Great question.
Hope that helps.
Yeah. I was just working with a client who kind of at tail end of our package, dealing with some addiction things with cigarettes and things like that. And so we worked on it like a very little bit at the end of one of the sessions, and then coming back to his last session, it was like, yeah, like I'm definitely doing it less. Like I'm definitely smoking less. Like it's still there, but like, I don't really feel the need to, but I'm still doing it. And then we kind of uncovered it was because of like certain situations where it's like the habit.
Yes.
It's the, this is the knowing. So we had to kind of, in one sense, you have to replace it with something else, mm-hmm. but not just replace it with like a different drug or a different, like, no, I'm just going to like work out. Like there has to be like something that gives you what you subconsciously felt and believed the drug, the cigarettes, the whatever was giving you, right?
Yes.
And so there's like this, and so again, for some people, it's like immediate. I mean, I've worked with people that it's cigarettes or vaping for years and years and years, and it's like one session done, like gone. And others, it's like, oh, this is like an unlayering of things because of the way that their brain has incorporated this into their life.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
Yeah. Okay, great. Here we have Aaron. I was wondering if you've heard anything about the body cellular makeup having the ability to hold subconscious programs. So rather than, I think what is being said here is instead of just the brain holding the subconscious programs, the body holding do you think rewriting could happen without consciously, subconsciously going there? With the body and mind being insanely connected, could the body hold the subconscious programs? So if the body had a release, could it shift the program in the mind? Okay, this is a little bit like, can we shift things in the body that then shifts it in the mind first?
Okay, it can, I think it can help. It can have an impact on. I think I'm just going to take this. I'm going to be really nitpicky about this. Could the body hold the subconscious program? Right there, no. Subconscious, conscious, mind. We're dealing with the mind, the action of the mind. The body holds things differently. It holds things differently. So when we change things in the mind, it will change the body eventually. Now, can you do a bottom-up approach, a bottom-up approach, change the body? Changing something in your body doesn't address the way that memory all the way was held visually, auditorily, audio-digitally. So that's where I would say I don't think it's complete. I think it could feel like it's completely different. But I think that if we were to go into the programming that created the body's held experience of that, there's going to be something left. I don't like to leave any pieces left. Because if you leave even a little piece left, it can recreate somewhere else. Because it's trying to be resolved. It's not nefarious. It's trying to be resolved.
Yeah. And so like even if you're working with the mind and the subconscious and you're only dealing with, let's say, a visual aspect of some memory that bothers you or something, and you leave out the kinesthetic aspect, the body aspect of what it did to you, then that's going to be a problem too, because sure, you can change, and it's going to feel a lot better though. I will say, like, in general, yes, you change one representational system, the way it's held in your body and mind, it's going to change a lot of things. But if there is something in the body left, there's going to be something left. And so that is where the marriage of the body and mind and that connection and releasing both, they're connected. You can't just do one without the other. And so, yeah.
And I'm wondering if this came from the episode we did on this, because we did do an episode on nervous system rewiring.
Yes, I think it is.
Okay. And that's where I talk about in there. The problem is that this to me is incongruency, where to say like, okay, just make it fine in your body, like regulate your nervous system, when you might still be holding memories and pains and ancestral things from your history that are being held subconsciously that are trying to seek resolution. So they are speaking up through the body. So I don't see it doesn't make sense to me to try to put your body in a regulated state, practice and practice and press and tons of breath work and lots of somatic and yoga and all these things to keep your body in this integrated, sort of like wired, regulated state when you've got all these horrible things happening to you still in your past.
You will absolutely expand your capacity to hold what you have in your past and what comes in to your present. So working just body up, it will expand that capacity for some people, potentially 100-fold, which is amazing. But wouldn't it be amazing to expand your capacity 100-fold, but also drop 1,000 other things you've been holding in your mind while expanding your capacity? Right. So it's, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I would say, I mean, hey, listen, we don't know it all. We don't know half of it.
This is why we're responding answering.
Yeah. We keep learning. We keep growing. And I think we keep, you know, understanding a lot more about the brain and the body. Do things get held in the body? For sure. Would just changing the way the body represents it change everything and then just go and rewrite a subconscious program? Let's just say I've yet to see that happen that I know of, that I'm aware of. Could it happen? It might happen. I'm not saying it couldn't happen, but I know the way we do it works. So I'd say just do that for sure, to make sure that you're covering both mind and body.
And just like anything else, there's layers, right? So you might clear something and then, you know, a little bit later you realize, oh, there's another layer that you need to work with through your subconscious mind, and then another layer. Great. There could also be a layer of like, I've cleared all this stuff in my mind. Oh, I actually have this thing that I didn't recognize was stored in my body. That's another layer. Like there's just layers, and this is a kinesthetic held program. Right?
Sure. Well, and also like, yeah, you may change your childhood, but you never learned to breathe properly. It would be good to do some breath work and learn to breathe properly, to, you know, to do some somatic exercises, to do some stretching, to build capacity for your body and to release some of the things that are held there. Yeah, I think that's fantastic. This is why I do mind change and not called body change, though, is because I believe that changing the subconscious programs are the more important thing to do, the more results, because we know the subconscious runs 95% of everything. That's a big, big portion. I think it's where the bigger work happens. That's what I think. Now, that being said, you better believe I've done a lot of somatic work and I've done a lot of breath work and I continue to do those things, meditation, yoga, you know, because now I feel like when I create capacity, I'm doing that to hold so much more of the good rather than continue to hold negative.
Well, and you're doing those things to expand yourself rather than
cope.
Cope. That's a great word. Yeah. Rather than like, okay, I'm doing okay because I'm doing X, Y, and Z. Rather, right. I'm doing so well, so okay, whatever you want to, that then I choose to do X, Y, and Z.
Right. Like we've worked with a lot of people and we hear in a lot of these, and I think I said this in that particular episode that we did, is a lot of these people to stay in alignment with the lifestyle, the good health, good mindset that they claim now, they have to continue a practice really, right, religiously. If they don't meditate every morning or most mornings or do their breath work or do their something, they become very dysregulated very fast. That to me, we're still giving power to the practice rather than this is more the embodied thing that comes out of me is regulation. And now I want to add in these other things to elevate myself rather than to deal with the things that are coming up inside of me.
Yeah.
But hey, listen, that's me. That's why I have this work that I do.
Yeah.
So
great. Well, those are our questions for today, guys. We ask you, please continue to send in your questions. In fact, what we would love, if you have questions, don't just wait for the next Q&R that's coming up. Like, send it now. We'll log them. We'll file them. We'll save them. Send them to podcast@mindchange.com. Please send, you're written, so you write it out, and then we'd love for you to send an audio version of that written out question, stating your name, where you're from, and what you'd like us to respond to for these episodes, because we really want to respond to your questions. We want to help you wherever you're at in the best way that we can. So thank you guys for your questions, for sending them in.
And most of our podcast episodes come from people's requests.
Yes, for sure.
What about this? And what about this? And so that's so much. We're in season three and we've three seasons of information that you guys are looking for, what you want, and interviews with people who've been through these issues and problems and have found freedom and release from all of this stuff. So that's what we're still trucking away with.
Yeah. And I will put a little plug in for, like, if you want to be able to have questions answered right away, like if you have things that are like, oh, I have all these burning questions and I want to learn more and do more. And I'd love to just, you know, be with Kent and Heather and like have these conversations. then join us for a retreat. We have two retreats coming up this fall. We have one in August. That's the self-empowered retreat. That's for course students. I mean, a number of these people asking the questions are course students. So please, like, come to that, deepen your self-work, get experiential mind change work as a group. Like, it's really, really powerful. We also have the couples deep dive, the intimacy awakening retreat in October. And so those are both held in the Austin area at a beautiful facility, all inclusive, 5 days. Like, please, if you want to like inundate your mind and body with all good things, transformational and nourishing, come to one of those retreats.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do some live events that we're doing one.
Actually, by the time this drops, just finished.
But we have one coming up in the DC area, the Northern Virginia area, in
September.
Yeah. So that's another great opportunity to show up live, ask your questions. We do groups, lots of different opportunities there. So thanks, guys. Thanks for your questions. And thank all of you for joining us once again on the Mind Change Podcast, where we are changing the world one mind at a time.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Mind Change Podcast. We hope that you found the insights and inspiration shared today valuable in your own journey of personal growth. Please be sure to subscribe to our podcast, or if you're watching us on YouTube, please like and follow us there. And we would really appreciate it if you would leave us a 5-star rating and review. It has measurable impact on how well we're able to reach others and continue to produce more free content to share. But mostly, thank you for taking this time as an opportunity to invest in yourself. Until next time, let's keep changing the world one mind at a time.